KFAR Radio's Meet a Pioneer. Today is November 30th, 1984. I'm Gail Malloy. Each Friday morning at 9 o'clock, we meet a pioneer. We'll spend the next hour with Les and Mildred Nerland. They're best known to us as the founding family of Nerland's Furniture and Home Appliance here in Fairbanks. This morning's presentation is sponsored by the Binkley family of the Riverboat Discovery, Don and Stasha Troutman of the Two Rivers Lodge, Dr. Carol Davis of the Denali Chiropractic Clinic, the Larson family of Larson's Fine Jewelers, our friends at Sophie Station, Bill Blackwelder of Interior Signs, and Sam and Jane McConkey of the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop. We're going to do something a little bit unusual with our Meet a Pioneer interview this morning. We're going to start off with something very special that was lent to us this morning by the University of Alaska Fairbanks, Alaska and Polar Regions Department of the Oral History Department, and it is the January 8, 1947 interview of Mr. Andrew Nerland on the KFAR interview series, Here's a Pioneer. Now, I will warn you that there are some portions of the audio that are a little bit difficult to understand. And that is because it was originally recorded on a disc, and I've mentioned those to you, and then it was transferred to tape, and once again it's been transferred to another tape for me, and in the period of the years we've lost just a little bit off of it. But listen very carefully, and I think you'll hear some very fascinating history. And then right after this interview, we'll meet Les and Mildred. And I'm going to play most of the interview for you because this may be the only opportunity you will ever have to hear this, as to my knowledge it has not been played on any radio station or television station of any sort since it was originally broadcast on January 8, 1947. Here's a pioneer.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's a pioneer.
Mr. Andrew Nerland.
Mr. Nerland, shall we begin by asking you when you first came to Alaska?
In the spring of 1898.
Will you tell us what was your home down in the state?
In Seattle, Washington.
How about the story of how you first came to Alaska?
Well, during the summer of 1898, the steamer Portland came into Seattle from Alaska, from St. Michael, and it carried, presumably, about $1 million worth of gold dust which had been mined up in the Klondike. And that was principally the reason that I got ready to go to Dawson or the Klondike.
I guess that made quite a bit of excitement down around Puget Sound at that time.
Yes, it did. It really electrified every community around there and every individual, as far as that's concerned.
And it really didn't take you very long to decide to come north.
No, it didn't. Of course, it took a little longer to get things together so I could come in some sort of a shape.
Was there anything particularly exciting about your trip over Chilkoot Pass?
After we got to sheep camp, we had to lighten our loads on the sleds and pull it up to a place called the Scales. From there on, all the provisions had to be carried on a man's back. One thing happened while I was there, that was this big slide there that just took place the first part of April 1898.
Snow slide?
Yes. About 62, 63 people were killed there in that slide.
Will you tell us a little bit more about that? Where were you when the slide occurred, and how did you happen to hear about it, and just exactly what happened there?
Well, we had our camp down at sheep camp, and this particular day being Sunday, and also that the weather was very heavy and very lot of snow was falling. So we decided not to go out that day, but there were a lot of people at the scales that also commenced to get leery about the slides. And it said that about 100 people took on to or held on to a rope and started on for sheep camp. But they were caught by slide long before they reached sheep camp.
The whole side of the mountain moved down there.
Well, that's about it, yeah.
Did they get all the bodies out?
Yes, there were a number of people that that didn't get caught in the slide, but all the bodies were eventually dug out. Everybody that were camping around there pitched in and dug out the snow or the pile up of slide so they could get at all the bodies, and they did get all the bodies. It's proved in the spring that there were none left there.
I see. Now, as I understand it, you left from Dyea near Skagway and went up over Chilkoot Pass and then down the other side to the Lake Bennett section, wasn't it?
That's right.
Uh-huh. How long, how many traveling days do you imagine elapsed between Dyea and Lake Bennett? That must have been a long, long trip.
Well, I think perhaps about 24 days.
I imagine the travelers along the way were particularly interesting. Of course, they were all Chechakers. And were there any women in the travelers?
Oh, yes, there were some women.
Any children at all?
Well, a few. Not very many, though.
Very few. A pretty tough trip for children.
Well, yes, it was... all the time.
Pretty hard to predict what was coming up. How did you make out when you got down to Lake Bennett? Were things pretty agreeable there? It was in the spring. I imagine the climate was with you.
Oh, yes. Weather. It was very nice. Clear weather. Lake Bennett. And we made a camp in a place where we could get lumber for our boat that everybody had to build. And there was thousands of people there. Same thing.
You really had a lot of company. I suppose they built some strange-looking craft, too.
They did. That's right.
Did some of them build rafts?
Oh, yes, rafts, too. But mostly some kind of a boat. All shapes around, some of them nearly round, some of them square, some of them regular boats, some very nice boats.
I see. And then as soon as the ice in Lake Bennett went out, then you proceeded downstream in the direction of Whitehorse.
Yeah, that's right.
Any particular difficulties in getting to Whitehorse and then on to Dawson?
Well, of course, we got down to Whitehorse Rapids. That had been sort of a scare in everybody's mind. And of course, there was just hundreds and hundreds of boats waiting at the head of the rapids to go through. Everybody went down to take a look and came back, got their boats, those that thought they could go through and sail on through. And others again got pilots to take them through, but evidently they all got through some way or other.
Mm-hmm. What about your trip through the rapids? How long did it take, and was it particularly rough?
No, I wouldn't say that. It was not any more than what we expected, having looked over the rapids beforehand. We sailed through there quite nicely in about 10 minutes.
Oh, I see. That's all it took. Did you see anyone else in difficulty?
Yes, there had been a crash there against the rock right in the center of the Whitehorse Rapids. Some boat had smashed right against the rock, and one of the men had saved himself by hanging on the rock, and he was still there when we came by.
And I imagine due to the condition of the water and so on, you didn't have much time to stop and pick him up.
No, we didn't.
Now, Moving on to Dawson, how did you find Dawson when you got there? Pretty well developed, a big population?
A lot of people there, tremendous lot of people there. Streets were crowded with men, and going out on the creeks, all the trails were crowded, just almost like in a city, on a city sidewalk, big city sidewalk.
I imagine there were terrific houses, probably.
Oh, yes, everybody had. Scary, although very serious. But of course, fresh food started to come in. People hauled food all the way from outside of the trail, horses riding into Dawson.
You know, we talk about the high cost of air transportation. I imagine if somebody had to carry it by hand on a sled all the way from Dai or some such place, it really would be expensive. What were the prices like?
Well, the prices were, for instance, a can of milk was selling for $1. And different other items gone along about the same price.
How about eggs?
Well, I noticed one thing. On the first days I was in Dawson, I walked down on the waterfront streets there, and I saw a barge, like quite a large barge, scow landed on the waterfront there, and I happened to see a sign on this barge that's made with a marking brush that says eggs, $300 a case. And I was wondering if that fellow thought that was a joke or how he put it on there. But anyway, I went out on the creeks. We'd gone for about 3 weeks walking over the different creeks. And I got back. They struck out the 300 and said eggs, 150 a case.
Well, I can see that the inflation period was over then. How about?
That's right. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Did you take a hand at prospecting yourself?
Well, not just then. I did later on. I did no prospecting in 98, except in going on stampedes and so forth, and probably stake some claims that later on perhaps didn't develop.
Uh-huh. I'm wondering how the rest of the newcomers to Dawson in that vicinity made out. Any particular stories about that?
Well, remember one story they were telling right along, that all the Chichaukas, most of them in a way, were anxious to get hold of some mining ground, and they didn't care where it was, just so that they could have some kind of a claim. It seemed like the story goes that about two or three Chichaukas came along up Bonanza Creek and they talked to one of the old prospector, old miners there. He was working his claim there in the summer, and they asked him, do you know where we can get some mining ground? And the old timer, he was going to put him off, and he said, yeah, right up there on that high hill up there. Because at that time, nobody had ever thought of discovering any gold up on those high hills. But anyway, the Chichaukas took him literally, and they went up there, started to dig, and they dug and dug, and it finally developed into one of the richest mining hills in the country. Millions was taken out of there.
I see. Now, will you tell us where you met Mrs. Nerland?
Oh, I met her. I'd met her in Seattle a number of years before I came north.
Well, then you made a trip out there shortly after you came up.
Made a trip out in the fall of 99.
Mm-hmm. Leslie was born here in the north, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was born in Dawson.
In Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
What year did you come to Fairbanks from Dawson?
1904. Spring of 1904.
Was there any activity over here in 1904?
Oh, yes, I'd say it was.
How many people do you imagine we had here?
A lot of people here, too. The steamboats coming in here were all crowded with people. And the streets here were crowded with people. And they were out on the creeks here, same as they did in Dawson,
look over mining ground, and a lot of them found mining ground.
I understand in those days the center of population was not only Fairbanks, but here in the outlying districts, just within a few miles.
Yeah, the creeks out here at Clary Creek and Chattanooga and Goldstream and Dome Creek, there were a lot of people there, and there were big operations there. Lots of individual mining concerns, and so that hired a lot of men. So those camps, they were quite lively centers.
And there was a railroad running out to Chattanooga.
Yes.
And didn't you say there were a couple of banks at Cleary, just about 25 miles out here?
Yes, that's right. At one time, I believe it was three branch banks at Cleary, branches from the banks here in this town.
Those are the things about the old days that are really hard to believe now. Well, I think we've covered the past. I'd like to talk for just a few seconds about the future. I might say that Mr. Nerland, in his years here in Fairbanks, has served as councilman and mayor and also on the legislature. Mr. Nerland, what idea do you have about Alaska's future on the basis of your experience of almost 50 years in the North?
Well, I always have had great faith in Alaska, and I still have that faith. And I'm not afraid to gamble the balance of my life in staying with it and see whether the great things are coming through. But whether they are or not, why, I have found it a wonderful, satisfactory place in which to do business and to live. The people here, for all the years past, they are wonderful people, and it's interesting to live in a place where you know a lot of people, both that comes into your store or that you meet on the street. And I have great faith in Alaska's future.
All right. Our thanks to you, Pioneer Andrew Nerland, for this interlude of reminiscence. We imagine that the name of Nerland will be well-known in Fairbanks for many generations.
Think so.
And thanks to you, too, from Joe Coble of the Fairbanks Institution, whose three decades of service here have made it a pioneer in fact as well as in name, the Pioneer Cab Company. Friends, be with us again next Wednesday for another quarter hour of sourdough tales and a reminder that here's a pioneer.
That was Here's a Pioneer that aired on January 8th of 1947. That was an interview of Mr. Andrew Nerland. And that was prophetic. Yes, the Nerland family is still well known in the Fairbanks area. We're on four or five generations past now. Well, we have the second generation of the Pioneer family, Les Nerland, that was mentioned in their interview, and his wife, Mildred Nerland. Good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Had you heard that interview at all since it was broadcast?
Years ago, I did.
When did your father pass away?
1966.
1966. Well, you were born, he mentioned that you were born in the Dawson, in Dawson, Yukon Territory, and that was March 11th of 1902. And Mildred, you were born in Bellingham, Washington on April 21st, 1900. Well, Les, what do you remember of Dawson? Were you there very long?
I was very small, of course, and I have very, very vague memories of Dawson. No outstanding part of the time that I was there. But due to the fact that there was a children's epidemic up there of dysentery, my parents decided that it'd be best for my mother and me to go out to Seattle and establish a home there and avoid the possibility of me contracting that disease.
So that was back in about 1903?
I think it was probably 1903, yes.
So it's no wonder your recollections are not very vivid. Well, who went then to Seattle, just you and your mother?
I think my father took us out and established a place to live out there. and then he came back in and to Fairbanks and or to Dawson, and eventually moved to Fairbanks. And then for many years, while he was in business here in Fairbanks, he would come out to Seattle in the fall of the year, spend Thanksgiving and Christmas out there, buy materials to take back into the store in the spring, and then...
All these years that he went back and forth between Alaska and Seattle, why were you and your mom in Seattle and he was continuing to work here? Was there a particular reason for that?
Well, yes, there was. His idea, of course, was eventually to come out and make a home for all of us in Seattle. But it just the way the economy was, there'd be times when it was very quiet and not too much business, and then that wasn't a good time to sell the business. And other times when business was better and booming a little bit, he thought, well, I'll hold on to this a little bit longer. And that turned into year after year. And I remember as a small child, I always looked forward to his coming out in the wintertime and hoped that one day that he would be out there living permanently with us.
Did you have any brothers or sisters?
No, I was the only child.
Uh-huh. Well, how did it all start, the store? Where did that start? Now, the beginnings, the origins of Nerland's as it is now was in Dawson.
That's right, yes. It began as a paint and wallpaper store there, and they also did contracting work in doing home and homes and businesses, and that still prevailed when they came down to the Fairbanks area.
And who's they?
My father had three partners, the Anderson brothers, and the firm was known in those days as Anderson Brothers and Nerland, and that continued for till 1922, when he purchased the interest of his partners, and they went outside to live, and he stayed in Fairbanks.
Oh.
And eventually, my mother and I came into Fairbanks and got into the business, and of course, have been here ever since.
Now, the Anderson brothers were Andrew, Lewis, and Herman. Which one of those was married to your father's sister?
Andrew.
Andrew was married to Amanda.
Yes.
So
right.
There's a bit of a family connection in there then. Well, it was 1926 that Annie came out. Now, you were with her then, came up to Fairbanks?
No. Mildred and I were married in 1926. And,
yes.
And my mother moved up to Fairbanks that year.
So finally, after all those years, a decision was made to stay here. Well, what were you doing in the meantime then, these years, growing up in Seattle?
Well, I went all through school there, graduated from the University of Washington in 1924 with a degree in business administration, and I worked for the streetcar advertising company in Seattle, and also for the Frigidaire Corporation.
What did you do for them? What was your nature of the business then?
Well, selling advertising, and also we conducted market surveys for the streetcar advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
We found that it was necessary in order to show that the advertising was working to go out and make surveys among the retailers and establish percentage of coverage that their goods had, and to induce the advertisers to continue with their program.
Now, when did you and Mildred meet, and what was the circumstances?
Well, we met in 1918 through a mutual friend who got us together on a blind date, and we've been eternally grateful to her ever since then, although she has passed away by now.
Mildred, tell me a little bit about that blind date. What did you think? Was it a first love at first sight?
Well, it might have been. shortly after this particular party where we were, why Les made a trip to California and was gone for some time. But when he returned, why, he called me, and we had really a very pleasant times together. We did a lot of going to a lot of dances. They had clubs in Seattle at that time, and it was sort of with the some of the university group, and also from Broadway High School, where we had both attended but didn't know each other at that time.
Now, you met in 1918 but didn't marry until 26, is that correct? That's a long engagement.
Right.
What?
That's
why
right.
Such a long engagement?
Well, go ahead.
It wasn't until 19 or 26 or about then that I got a job that I earned about $500 a month, and we figured that we could get along on that, so we got married.
So you were waiting to get more established and
supportive. That's right,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
I see. So in 26 you married, and then you were working at the Frigidaire Corporation. Well, something happened in 1930 that completely changed your lives around. Mildred, why don't you tell that story, since you're the one who received the message?
Well, it was on one of my birthdays, and in 1926. And being that I was born in 1900, it was easy for me to remember when things happened, because I knew that that was really a help to me. Let's see, where was
it? You got a birthday greeting from
Les's
folks.
Yes, I had this wire from Les's parents, Annie and Andrew Nerland, and they said happy birthday and their love, but added that they wondered if we would come into Fairbanks and spend a year taking care of the store so they could make a trip to Norway. As they hadn't been returned there since their honeymoon.
And so you decided to take them up on that offer. Was that a difficult decision to make, to stop, leave your job and your home for a year?
Not really. Our connections there were such that it was fairly easy to make the transition, and we decided that we would make every effort to clean up our affairs there and moved to Fairbanks.
Now, you had been to Fairbanks before, is that correct, Les?
I'd been in Fairbanks in the summer of 1922 while I was still going to school.
Uh-huh. And Mildred, you had not been to Fairbanks, but you had been into Alaska. You had been in Southeastern?
Yes. I was in Southeastern Alaska during one summer when I was but 3 years old, and this was down by Petersburg. And then later on, when I was about 13, my father and our family moved to Petersburg, where my dad was interested in the cannery and the mill at that time. And we were there about 3 years.
Now, being in this area that early, the Yukon watershed area, before 1908, qualified you for a special membership.
Yes, into the Pioneer Women. Now, that is an organization that's entirely different from the Pioneer Women that belong to the auxiliary of the Pioneers of Alaska. And now, I think there is one member that is in the home, and I think I'm the only other one that is left in that organization beside a few that are in the United States.
My goodness. Well, when did you arrive in Fairbanks then for that quote-unquote 1 year?
That was in May of 1926.
Oh, of 26.
Yeah.
I see. So it was certainly in a decent time of year. It wasn't coming in the middle of winter. What were your first impressions?
Well, it was entirely different than anything we had known of before, but we felt that there was a friendliness there among people, and we certainly received a warm reception from the people generally, and we came with the idea that we were going to like it, and we did. And it wasn't long before we decided that this was the place we wanted to live continuously.
We'll be back in a moment with Les and Mildred Nerland on Meet a Pioneer. Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop. Sam and Jane McConkie believe beautiful things are timeless, and everything you find at the Forget-Me-Not shop is beautiful. Fine linen, silver, crystal, decorator items for your home or office, and that little something for special friends. Forget-Me-Not adds a feeling of luxury to even the most practical items. So, for beautiful things for years to come, for your friends, your home, or for yourself, remember the Forget-Me-Not gift shop, open 10 to 6, 6 days a week in Northgate Square.
Alaskans have always been famous for their hospitality. The same wonderful hospitality you still find at the Two Rivers Lodge, where Don and Stasha Troutman offer the best menu and interior, a comfortable, quiet atmosphere, and that famous Alaskan welcome to the people who are today's history makers. If you've been meaning to try one of the most talked-about dining experiences in the Alaskan interior, don't wait any longer. Go out tonight to the Two Rivers Lodge, 16 Mile Chena Hot Springs Road.
Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by Interior Signs, long established as one of the interior's most professional, most dependable year-round sign makers. They're licensed, insured, and always ready to serve Fairbanks with signs of every kind. Signs for business, contracting, or creative design. So for signs that stand the test of time, call Interior Signs at 479-3859. That's 479-3859. Interior Signs at 2405 South Cushman.
We're back with Les and Mildred Nerland on Meet a Pioneer on KFAR Radio. We're going to back up just a moment here to clarify the time, the year that you came to Fairbanks.
Yes, it was in May of 1930.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, May of 1930 means it was just months, not even a year yet, since the crash of the stock market and the beginning of the Depression years in America. Did you see any difference between the way things were out there and here? Did that have some impact on your life?
Well, we when we left Seattle at that time, the Depression really hadn't taken its full effect, but we were aware that things were not the best for good times. But when we came to Fairbanks, there were no soup lines or no people in distress, so it looked like this was a place where people could get along very well, even when there was a slump in the economy, which didn't last very long here.
When you got here, things seemed to fall into place for you, like buying your first home.
Yes.
Go ahead. At that time, we were trying to find a home. We made all kinds of inquiries, and it seemed like that we just couldn't find the place to move. We had been staying with Les's folks at the over the store, but it wasn't too convenient for them, and we were anxious to get settled in our own place. We did find, as the days went on, that we could rent a small house on 8th Avenue, and so we decided to do this, although there were no modern conveniences, and it was a house where in one of the drawers of one of the pieces of furniture, we found divorce papers, and we were told that a young Southern woman had lived there, and So the place was really in bad shape. But with the help of a young native girl, why, we were able to get everything cleaned up and made curtains for the windows and made it a good place, a homey place to live.
This was your first place and you rented it?
Yes.
And then later you bought a place.
Yes. Why don't you tell them about that?
Well, it so happened that the president of the First National Bank at that time, George Hutchinson, had recently passed away, and his widow had their home up on 9th Avenue, which was a log cabin with some additions to it. And she was originally from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and wanted to go back to be with her family there. So she put the house up for sale, and we were interested, but she insisted that anyone who bought the house also had to buy her property out at Birch Lake, which we didn't mean much to us at that time, but we were so anxious to find a home of our own, and this one was very attractive because it was well furnished with the Grand Rapids furniture, and so we finally made an arrangement with her to buy both Birch Lake property and the home on 9th Avenue. And of course, the Birch Lake property turned out to be the most valuable part of the deal because the home eventually got to the point where it had to be demolished, and after we had made some additions to it. And the Birch Lake property, of course, is still very valuable, and our family has enjoyed the recreation values there for many, many years and still do.
Speaking of family, when you came up here, you did have a little one at the time. You had Jerry, who had been born in 1927. So.
Yes, Jerry was born in Seattle in 1927, and Ron, our second son, was born in Fairbanks in 1932. And our daughter, Maless, who now lives in Anchorage, was born in Fairbanks in 1940. All of our children, both of those children, were born at the old St. Joseph Hospital here in Fairbanks. Jerry was born in the General Hospital in Seattle.
You got, Les, you got quite involved in community affairs here in the Fairbanks area, and it was a result of an incident that had to do with the main school. Would you tell us that story?
Well, the main school, which was a wood frame building, caught fire through a defective furnace or something of that sort, and burned to the ground early in the 1930s. And it was necessary to have classes for school around at different stores and buildings that were available. Among them was the Masonic Temple, where they had a number of classes until a new building could be built. They had to issue bonds for that, and a controversy arose as to what kind of a building it was going to be. There were a number of carpenters in town here who insisted that it had to be a wood frame building, and many of us felt that we'd had our lesson at the old schoolhouse burning down and we had to have a fireplace building. So it took three elections to get the bond issue passed for a concrete building, and eventually we were able to get that approved. And eventually, of course, the present school building, which still stands, was erected.
That's the main school building right over there.
Main school, yes.
Uh-huh. You can see it from here. Well, so it was your concern as a father of young children that led to your getting involved in local politics.
Yes, and as a result of that experience, I felt, and some others did too, that we should have a change in administration here. So I talked to an attorney here, E.B. Collins, who was a very fine person, and talked him into running for mayor, which he agreed he would do if I would run for council. Well, I didn't realize that I was getting trapped because I was on the council for 6 years until 1938, when he retired, and I was induced to run for mayor, and I served then for two terms of 1 year each as mayor until 1940, and then when I retired.
Well, there were some interesting and important things that happened during your time in politics, and one of them was the installation of Ladd Field, late 30s. Can you tell us a little bit of the story of that coming about and your involvement with the military in setting that up?
Well, we found out that there was going to be an air base in Alaska, and it was a question whether it was going to be in Anchorage or in Fairbanks, and of course we were very anxious to have it here because it would be a great boost to the economy wherever it might be built. So I became quite well acquainted with some of the military people who were making the survey, and it was quite an interesting experience to be associated with them and discuss the various points and the various requirements that they would need here. But I recall very distinctly when Colonel Lee came to Fairbanks with the at the time that the final decision had been made but not announced, and he told me when he arrived, he said, "Well, Mayor Nerland," he said, "I'm sorry to tell you that Anchorage is going to get the Air Force base, but," he said, "we're also going to build one here in Fairbanks," which they did, eventually did, of course, at Ladd Field. And while it wasn't, it didn't develop into as large a project as Anchorage had, it was a great support for the economy here in Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm. About that time, when you got here, where was the original Nerland store?
It was right across from what was the old post office building and is now on Cushman Street between 2nd and 3rd Avenues.
Oh, across from the courthouse building.
The old courthouse building, yes. Huh.
No, so the original building that Nerland's was in is no longer there?
Yes, that was torn down years ago.
Uh-huh. Well, what did you two do in the store? Now, did, in fact, your folks take off and leave you with the store for a year?
As a matter of fact, they didn't make that trip to Norway for a couple of years after we got here.
Ah.
Actually, 1935. But in the meantime, we had been pretty well established here, made friends, and had decided that this was a good place to live, and we wanted to stay here, so we just settled down to our life here.
Did you have a car?
Yes, we did. We had a 1920 Buick in Seattle when we were there, and we shipped that up here and used that for several years, and eventually had to buy another one, of course. But a car was almost necessary here because we made frequent trips out to Birch Lake, and it was necessary to have transportation.
There weren't a lot of paved roads when you first got here.
There were no paved roads
at all.
None.
No. Oh, so during your administration, though, several were paved, and what other things happened during your tenure on the city council?
Well, I was still on the council. We applied for funds from Washington to pave 2nd Avenue and part of Cushman Street up to 3rd Avenue, and also to install sewers, and in the first part of my term, we got that work started, and eventually had the sewers and those streets paved, and that gradually led to other streets being paved, of course.
Mm-hmm. We'll be back in just a moment with Les and Mildred Nerland on Meet a Pioneer.
Improper foundation alignment can cause serious problems with an entire structure, problems that may disturb or even totally disrupt normal functioning of that structure. Thus, chiropractic endorses the importance of spinal integrity combined with a personal commitment to physical fitness to help each individual achieve their maximum potential for good health and proper bodily functioning. For information on how chiropractic can help you, see Dr. Carol Davis of the Denali Chiropractic Clinic, 3525 College Road, phone 479-0485.
Alaska is still a land of pioneers, like the Binkley family, who for three generations have operated riverboats in the state of Alaska.
Running the riverboat Discovery has given our family the opportunity to show so many others just a little corner of the Alaska we love. That's also one of the reasons we're proud to be a sponsor of Meet a Pioneer. This program gives us all a chance to find out more about the fascinating history of this special place we call Alaska, and we look forward to each week's program. We're looking forward to seeing you again next summer aboard the riverboat Discovery.
Today's Alaskans are demanding more. More style, more options, more flexibility, and more for their money. And they're finally getting it from Sophie's Station, Fairbanks' newest, most attractive contemporary living complex. Sophie's Station is a prestigious addition to our community, designed for optimum quality, comfort, and convenience. For adult living at its best, see the new 1- and 2-bedroom units, now available at Sophie's Station.
When Roy Larson started Larson's Jewelers on that day back in 1946, he had big dreams of what he'd like his business to become. Over the years, some of those dreams changed and others came true. Today, Larson's is still a family-owned business and one of the finest and most complete jewelry stores in the interior. Almost 40 years of skill and experience go into everything they do. Like Fairbanks, they've grown, but they're still your friend and neighbor. Larson's, fine jeweler since 1946 at 405 Noble.
Is waiting for you.
We're back with Les and Mildred Nerland on KFAR Radio's Meet a Pioneer. In our final 10 minutes, we'll try to cover a lot of ground here. During your, during your entire first few years here and during your administration as mayor and on the city council, there was the infamous 4th Avenue line. Where was that located exactly?
It was down on 4th Avenue, between about halfway down the block from Cushman started, and then on down to Barnett Street on the north side of the street. And it had been there for a number of years, and but there was controversy about it, and of course it was right down in the middle of town, and people felt that that shouldn't be. But on the other hand, it was also realized that if it were demolished or they had to leave there, that it would probably be spread all over town, which would make it very hard to control. As it was, the women that were down there were very orderly. They would come uptown and do their shopping and were not allowed in any of the bars. But many of them were good customers in the stores, and many of them had backgrounds that kind of endeared themselves to the people in Fairbanks in this area. For instance, there was one woman, Edith Neal was her name. Her nickname was the Oregon Mare, which was quite colorful. And she had been very active when the flu had hit Nenana, and she was credited with saving many lives down there for the care that she gave a lot of the patients, and so she was very well respected. As a matter of fact, in her declining years, she moved to Seattle, and we learned that she was in a home that kind of a retirement home, and my mother and I went to see her, particularly because my mother knew of the work she'd done in Nenana, and we kind of gave her, cheered her up in the last days of her life.
Gee whiz.
And there were others that had performed similar activities that endeared themselves to the, endeared them to the community.
Uh-huh. That's an interesting story. At the time, when did the new store open up in its other location and building, and what was the circumstances about that?
Well, we realized that there was an opportunity for furniture business in Fairbanks, and the store we had on Cushman Street just wasn't large enough to be able to display furniture adequately, so we decided we'd build over on 4th Avenue, just east of Cushman Street, on property that we'd acquired. And we built that in 1954, and then added to it in 1960, and eventually the building resulted in the size that it is now, where we have very adequate space for displaying furniture.
Huh. Well, right now, people that are listening to you right now are probably enjoying furnishings in their home that have come from Nerland's.
I'm sure that they are.
Now, what was on that lot at the time you bought it?
There was a log warehouse
that
had to be demolished, and we bought additional property to the east of it, and so that we had adequate room for expansion, and eventually ended up with the building as it is now.
Uh-huh. Well, during this time, all this time, your father had a particular interest in Alaska statehood, and it actually was you that became very involved in that. Tell me that story and what was involved, and how did you become a part of the Constitutional Convention?
Well, I suppose through the activity of my father in the legislature and his constant urging for statehood for Alaska, they felt that one of us should be in this constitutional convention. My father had spent many years in the legislature, both in the House and the Senate, and he was getting to the time of life when he didn't want to be any more active in politics, so it fell on my shoulders to run for delegate to this convention, which was held out on the university campus. And that was a very gratifying experience, because we had delegates from all over the state, and everyone gathered there with the idea of forgetting all prejudice against or for any particular locality, and working out a constitution that would be the best for the state of Alaska. And I think time has proven that that was developed, because the Constitution is regarded as really a model for other states.
Mm-hmm. How long did it actually, was your involvement in this, in the planning?
Well, I think we met for 60 or 70 days to start with, and then recessed and took up again the next year in February, I believe it was.
What years were those?
1966, we...
56, I think. It had been a little bit earlier than that. So it was the last of 1 year and the beginning of another, about three, 4 months or so?
Yes, uh-huh.
How did you feel when you went back to the anniversary celebration a few months ago?
Well, it was kind of an anti-climax, of course, but a lot of the delegates had been friendly during the convention, and we made those connections again. It was really like a family gathering.
E.B. Collins ended up being in the Constitutional Convention, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
But he had passed away some years before. Tell me the story about your father hearing of the news of it being signed.
Well, when the Constitution was finally finalized, they called a meeting of all the delegates to sign the Constitution, much as our national Constitution had been signed in the early days. So we all got together and signed the papers, and then a copy was given to each one of us of the to have the copy of the Constitution with all the signatures. So I came back to the store after this had been done and showed this copy of the Constitution to my father, and I said, well, Dad, this is the, finally we got the Constitution, now we have to get the statehood. He said, well, that's just fine, I'm very happy about that. And 15 minutes later, he dropped dead in the store. And I've just been very thankful that before he died, he learned that this had been accomplished.
Oh, my word. Mildred, you've been a side-by-side partner with Les all these years. Your involvement in his activities has certainly been by his side. It seems to me, after getting to know you a bit, too, there certainly is and has always been quite a love affair between the two of you. What's life been like in Fairbanks and with Les?
Well, life has been very wonderful in Fairbanks, and in buying this home, we were most fortunate to have wonderful neighbors. And a neighbor is a wonderful person. And some of those were the two Loftus families and the Bill Green family, the Lindys, the Hughes, the Fravels, and others. And I'm sure that those that are listening are well acquainted with these people. One little incident that I've always remembered is when we moved there into the home, why, I was usually doing daily washing, and I would go out of the back door and hang the clothes on the line. And I noticed on the next street this young woman would come out and wave. So we waved back and forth every day for many days. And but it seemed like that, you know, I was busy getting settled and all, and just sort of this would come to mind every once in a while. And one afternoon, there was a knock at our door, and I went to the door, and there were two women there, and they had their hats on, dressed for afternoon, and even their white gloves. And they introduced themselves when they came in, and we visited a while. And then the younger of the two women said, I'm the one that has been waving at you every morning. And this was Dorothy Loftus. And I know that many of you that are listening to the program here are well acquainted with her. And we have had just wonderful friendship all these years.
It's been a great pleasure to have you on Meet a Pioneer this morning. You certainly are a pioneer Alaskan family, Les and Mildred Nerland. I'd like to thank our sponsors, the Binkley family, the Riverboat Discovery, the Two Rivers Lodge, Dr. Carol Davis, the Denali Chiropractic Clinic, the Larson family, Larson's Jewelers, our friends at Sophie Station, Bill Blackwelder and Interior Signs, Sam and Jane McConkie and their friends at the Forget Me Not. It's been a great pleasure. I'd like to mention and acknowledge that, Les, you have been selected as this year's Distinguished Citizen to be honored next Thursday evening on the 6th of December, and that's quite an honor, and it's certainly been an honor to have you on the program this morning. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you.
You've been listening to Meet a Pioneer. A taped version of this interview will become a part of the permanent oral history collection of the Alaska and Polar Regions Department at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This program was produced by Gail Malloy.
In the September deficit, but still a massive lot of red ink. Doctors plan to put artificial heart patient William Schrader through more paces today. They'll test a battery power pack that would permit Schrader a limited amount of mobility. They say he's pretty tired today. As one spokesman put it, he's got the blahs. The White House has confirmed that the president will not try to abolish the Education Department this coming year. Final recall of a 1980 campaign pledge. We still await the nomination of a new Secretary of Education to replace resigning Carol Bell. The country's first mandatory seatbelt law goes into effect in New York State tomorrow. And not all New Yorkers are happy, as we hear from John Pasadomo, who happens to be the director of the Motor Vehicles Commission.
People have called me a dictator and other choice names, and said, you can't tell me, who are you to tell me that you're going to save my life? I says, well, wait a minute. Let's not put it on a basis of saving your life. Talk about your wife's life, your children's lives. Are they worthwhile saving? Are you making too big a sacrifice to save their lives?
Pasadomo says experience in other countries has proven that such laws can save lives, and he adds, they aren't going to be handing out any fines until January. The trouble in French New Caledonia has suddenly gotten more serious. A French settler was killed in a battle today between whites and Melanesian island natives who have been fighting for independence. It's the first death linked to the independence campaign. As you may know, there are elections scheduled for January in India. You may not have known that Peshori Lal is among those running for parliament. Not that he started out to do that. In fact, Mr. Lal went to the government office to apply for a ration card. They gave him the wrong form, and the rest is obvious. He filled it out, he got himself approved to go on the ballot for parliament, and now that the mistake has been discovered, he decides that he likes the idea and refuses to withdraw. On Wall Street, the Dow is down a little over 5 points at 1188.27, volume 55.5 million shares. This is ABC News.
Since some of the most memorable Christmas gifts are also the most practical, True Value Hardware Stores suggest you consider quality phones for the special people on this year's gift list. Hi, Pat Summerall to say they offer a complete selection of name brand telephones, including the latest cordless models, like a Uniden Extendaphone offering a cord-free range of up to 1,000 feet. It features last number redial and automatic standby, and it's holiday priced at only $69.99 at participating True Value Hardware stores and home centers.
For the ABC Information Network, I'm Kate Dorden.
A car in good working order is not only safe and dependable, but can save you money in fuel and repairs. Hutchison Standard Service is the place to take your car when you want a dependable engine tune-up, under-the-hood work, or tire repair. For quality Chevron products, from engine to clutch, take it to Hutch, 705 Gaffney.